Access number 28670, Mr. David Wilson, Rail 7. Now, anything else, which I think we might be nearing the end of your time at board, no, but or did anything happen? You mentioned the gypsy thing, we've done that. Anything else happen during your training?
Well, remember one slightly humorous story. That was on the heath itself, on Borden Heath, there was a large cabin, hut, a wooden hut, built into the middle of the heath, and it was run by, I think it was some sort of concession to some elderly ladies that ran the thing, and they used to do these beautiful jam pasties, which were sort of traditional shaped pasties full of raspberry jam, and they were red hot, and at Nuffy Break you would have a ring of tanks centered on this wooden hut, and all the crews were galloping across and sitting on the forms and ordering these jam pasties and a mug of tea. And I recall when you bit into them, if you weren't wary, you bit into them, they were red hot, and it squirted all over the place, and everybody got a bit, you know. And it became the gathering point for everybody at Nuffy Break when you were out on the heath, like, you know. Apart from that, Borden was, it was all work, it was, and regimental. I mean, there was a lot of bull in the barracks. You got your room jobs, you used to take the bumpers up and down the polished corridors.
So all that stuff you had before, you
got more of the same. You still had quite a lot of regimental, and marching about the square and rifle drill.
I think we covered that last time. Yeah. And anything else then before we leave Havana Barracks?
No, I think Borden was, I think the traumatic thing was waiting when the course was finished or coming to the end, waiting first of all to make sure that you had qualified, you had got through.
Now, how did they finally test you? We'll perhaps do that for next time.
That was classroom, you were tested on your classroom work. And it was, from what I recall, the final test was, there was the practical trait test, which we mentioned before, but there was an assessment, and each instructor gave his assessment on his each individual, on his own particular subject, and that was the basis of marking. I cannot remember sitting down taking a formal exam at the end of it. Apart from the practical trait test, the rest was an assessment by each instructor, and of course it was published on orders whether you had passed or not, and that was always obviously a nerve-wracking time.
And you had passed?
Oh yes, I passed. Actually, I found it relatively easy because it. I had been to a technical college before I went in at 18, which I did go in when I was 18, rather than wait till I was 21. I was quite happy with the whole thing. And we, because the next trauma was waiting to see where you had been posted.
Now, where did you want to be posted? Did you have any idea in mind?
Well, I wanted to go abroad. I didn't want to end up at a permanent staff somewhere.
Why did you want to go abroad?
I think it was just the sheer adventure. I'd never been anywhere prior to that.
Were you able to ask for an overseas posting, or was it just in the lap of the gods?
It was, as far as I know, it was at that stage, it was in the lap of the gods. You just took what it was dished out. As it happened, I was posted to Catrick.
Now, that you'd been there from August to October,
sort of
52. 12,
yeah.
And then you go to Catrick in October then?
October 52, yeah.
And who were you posted to at Catrick?
One Command Workshops. But it was also a transit camp, so we knew that we wouldn't be there very long. And as it happened, it was only 2 weeks-ish, 2-3 weeks.
What impression did Catrick arrive when you arrived?
The workshop was mainly crewed by civvies, the people who were doing the big jobs, particularly on the engine transmission changes and the big stuff on the tanks were generally speaking civilians. There was army personnel in administrative positions, but the guys that were there were the military people that were there. The rank and file were generally either in transit going out or in transit coming back for demob from Korea and the Far East generally. So it was the sort of camp where they didn't really seem to know what to do with you. There was always regimental. There was fatigues. Used to get interior economy first thing in the morning, which meant dusting in the barracks in your particular room. And of course, the guy in charge would be some full corporal that was straight back from Korea, who didn't give very much credence to the whole thing, and he more or less did what he wanted. And then you would have LMG, would be the second session where you stripped and reassembled a Bren. A lot of people used to disappear. Nobody asked any questions. And the whole thing was in a state of flux as far as the military personnel were concerned. As I say, I think primarily because it was a transit camp and the civvies seemed to run the actual physical side of it. And as I say, we were only there possibly about 3 weeks at the most. And
anything happened there? Or?
Well, they had a fire during that time where there was a few heroics.
Tell us about that.
Well, it was in the laundry, and we were in the barracks one night, and just me and the naffy come back into the spider, and the alarm went, and it was I think it was over a weekend. Yeah, it was, because the camp was that was fairly empty. The permanent staff had gone, but there was one guy. Broke into the laundry, climbed on the roof, broke into the laundry through a fan light, and set about putting the fire out, opened the doors and let everybody else in so they could have a go, and then of course the fire brigade came. There was one guy who ended up, I remember there was a scouse ran amok with a fire axe from the fire point at the guard room.
And what caused that? What happened?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't present, but I heard all about it. And he had attacked the. I think he had come back drunk, and he had attacked the chased the guard commander with this axe from the fire point. They had a bit of a job to arrest him and sling him in the cells. It was, as I say, I just had a brief sort of glimpse of Catterick and. It's not the sort of place I would have wanted to. I would have hated to be posted there permanently.
What were conditions like there?
Yeah, well, they were primitive. They were. I mean, the accommodation was the First World War spiders, and they were falling to pieces then. I don't know when they actually got rid of them, but.
What about the food?
The food was. I haven't got any real sort of. Recollection of it being particularly bad, so it must have been eatable. The naffy was all right. There was a canny naffy, and of course there was the camp centre where there was quite a lot of facilities for soldiers.
What kind of facilities?
Well, clubs again, generally, and there was a big naffy in the camp centre. Shopping and sort of billiards, snooker, and. Eating, of course, which was one of the main concerns of an 18-year-old. It didn't get out much from Catterick. I mean, Darlington wasn't very far away, but, of course, again, I wasn't there long enough to get into the swing of the thing. Of course, then you had to wait you had to watch Part 1 orders to see if your posting had come up.
And what happened when you got your posting?
Well, it was... the 3rd Royal Horse Artillery in Germany, and you just simply got your date, got your travel warrant, got kitted up, and away you went to the station. We went where it would be Darlington Station, And then away to, there was three of us went from on the same draft, down to Harwich, and then across on the ferry to the Hook of Holland, and then the train into Germany, and we landed up at Rothenburg, which was the Rimi transit camp. That was an ex-Luftwaffe barracks, which was sumptuous. It was marble fittings and fixtures in the ablutions, and the barrack rooms themselves were beautiful. Half a dozen guys to one room, and I thought, you know, they really knew how to do it. Far better facilities than we had. But it was only a couple or 3 days there, and then we moved on, and we went to Munsterlager, which is up beside in northern Germany in the British zone, near Soltau, near the Lüneburg Heath. And
when did you get there? You've gone to Catterick in October. October. So was it before or after Christmas?
It was before Christmas. It was before Christmas.
So November-ish.
Yes. November-ish, but tail end of November. Yeah, no, it was before Christmas because you went straight out on a scheme.
Now, what happened when you? What were your first impressions when you joined? This is going to be your regiment. You were joining.
Oh, yes.
As a driver or a driver mechanic? A driver mechanic.
Well, I was a mechanic. The trade was VMEFV. However, after having said that, I mean, I think most people realise that whatever your trade is, if you're capable of doing something else and they need somebody to do something else, you get the job, you know, if you appear to be competent enough.
Now, what was your reception when you got there?
Well, it's the main part of the camp itself was quite modern. It was at a big parade square, and it was on the edge of pine forest countryside, and the main camp, admin block, drill square was quite large. There was a big naffy there, but there was other parts of it, such as the LAD where we ended up, which were small brick blocks away from the main barracks, and they were sort of set among the trees. And then there was a road went down to the workshops, the LAD workshops, which was down through the forest. And then there was a big square in front of the hangars at the workshop as a tank park and for vehicles awaiting or standing about after repairs.
Now, that's the physical nature of the camp. Now, how did they treat you when you were... I mean, you know, you arrive, you're not a civilian anymore, but you're new to the 3rd RHA. Well, right. That's who you're joining.
Well, yeah, from the beginning, you are incorporated into the thing quite quickly, and it's actually, with my experience in speaking in retrospect, I realise now that the colonel of the regiment was very, very keen on his... on looking after his attached personnel, particularly the Rimi, and he set a great store by his tradesmen. He used to spend a lot of time down at the LAD, and we got to know him quite well. Particularly anybody with a Geordie accent, apparently, because it was Lieutenant Colonel Goshen was his name.
Colonel?
Goshen. G-U-S-C-H-E-N. Lieutenant Colonel Goshen.
What was he like?
He was a slightly built man. That his clothing, he always seemed to be too big, particularly his cap, which tended to sort of push his ears down. But he was a gentleman, and he was obviously a very brave man. He was... He had won the Military Cross at Sidra's Egg during the war, and he was captured at Sidra's Egg. He was a major, I think. He was J Battery commander at the time. And by this time, by 52, he was obviously colonel of the regiment. And
so he impressed you?
Very much so. In fact, the officers generally, you had one or two, mainly National Service second lieutenants who didn't seem to know very much. But I think that the officers and the admin staff and even the RSM were tended to be very competent. And although the regiment itself was very regimental, let's say. I mean, it's proud of its history and its past and its tradition. It was a working regiment, and you got on with your job. And if you got on with your job and you did a good job, people seemed to appreciate it.
Now, who were you when you got there? Who were you attached to first? Was this MT section of headquarters?
No, it was just the LAD. The LAD was a subunit, as were the signals troop. In fact, the signals troop had the next door small block next door to us.
So were you just headquarters battery or just light aid depot?
RHQ. RHQ. Because you had HQ battery, G battery, D battery, and M battery. And but the thing was that each battery also drew from the LAD, and you had a battery fitter. So yeah, G battery, D battery, and M battery all had fitters, but they were all responsible to the LAD and to the captain in charge.
Could you sum up the role of the LAD and how it was organised?
Well, the LAD was as the term suggests, a light aid detachment, in as much as it would only carry out work in the field which would only take a given amount of time. Light aid work, you could describe it, the sort of work which would keep the vehicle moving, on the other hand, to recover it in order to get it back to a second echelon workshop or back to base workshops. So it was, I suppose it was running repair work, you could say. Maybe slightly more than that, because there were some German civilians who used to do, you know, sort of gearbox changes and, gearbox overhauls and this sort of thing on the Jeeps. And there was a blacksmith and a welder. They were all German civilians. But in the main, as I said, the role of the LAD was running repairs up to, say, 4 hours in duration.
Now, what was the composition of it?
Well, the CEO was a captain. The 2IC was a WO2, Q Hurley, they called him. And then there was a sergeant in the stores, the vehicle stores. And then the tradesmen, which were VMEFV, ordinary vehicle mechanics, gunfitters, recovery mechanics, one or two drivers and general duties guys, a blacksmith, and of course, dependent upon the amount of trade qualifications they had, they would either have none, one or two tapes, and then of course among the regulars, I'm talking about national servicemen now, but among the regulars you would have sergeants, staff sergeants and WO2s, and that was our first class in the LAD that I can recall.
What transport did you have?
Well, it's
move yourselves
in Germany, I ended up with a Scammel, a Pioneer Scammel, the diesel Scammel, the one
that's
with
a truck, a lorry.
It's a heavy recovery vehicle.
No, tell me about that.
It's a tractor. It's a 6x4 diesel-engined recovery tractor, which was used for other purposes as well. It was used on occasion with
and
the right
threading. The main use first.
Right, the main use to us was heavy recovery, and we used to. It was used for, actually on occasion it was used for recovering the SPs, the sextons that we had. We used to on exercises with the Scammon, we used to follow the air vehicles, which was quite difficult at times cross country when it was churned
up. The unit was equipped with sextons. That's 25 pounder self.
Yes, it was the 25 pounder SP.
But we'll come back to that. So let's stick to the Scammon. So you'd follow.
Well, the Scammon used to. We would follow the.
Wouldn't it be a lot slower than the sexton?
Yes. We tended to get lost quite a bit, left behind quite a bit. I remember on one occasion we were left behind. We were trying to catch up, and we came past some of our own lads who had. I mean, the LAD had various vehicles. We had a machinery truck, K5 Austin. There was obviously a radio and a communications.
I'll come to all them. Let's stick to the heavy recovery.
This Scammon, right? So we used to follow, as I say, you had the order of march generally as you came up on net and the regiment moved off. You would order of march would be RHQ, J battery, D battery, M battery, and then the LAD following up behind, and the signals troop as well. Well, I don't know, maybe the signals troop was up further up the line. And we used to sort of sweep around for tail end Charlies, anybody, broken down, and get them fixed or put them on tow or whatever. And the Scammon itself would only do, the diesel engine Scammon, the early one that we had, would only do 22 miles an hour flat out. It would do it going up the side of a house, but it was still just 22 miles an hour. So you obviously got left behind quite a bit.
So how would you, when you got to a broken down sexton, how would you recover it? I mean, what was the?
Oh, well, the recovery was, it depended on the circumstances. I mean, if it was rolled on its side or something fairly traumatic like that, you had to send down. And of course, I must stress that although I was in the Scammon, there was perhaps four of us with the Scammon crammed into the cab, and one of the guys was a recovery mechanic, and of course it's quite a complex arrangement to set up a 3-to-1 pull or something like that, which means ground anchors and pulleys and an arrangement of pulleys in order to enhance the ability of the winch on the Scammon to winch a heavier weight, rather than winching the Scammon into the job, and of course there was another thing with the Scammon, and I think we were among the first to try it in Germany. They fitted a spade at the back, which is a sort of triangulated huge metal plate pivoted at the back of the truck, and when you took the pins out, the retaining pins, and backed the Scammon up onto it, it dug deep into the ground in order to resist, as I say, the winching vehicle being winched into the subject rather than the other way around. And it worked fine. The Scammon itself, although it was debated whether it was actually up to the job of recovering hard-skinned vehicles, in practice I can't recall ever being caught out with it. I mean, by that time they weren't reducing, sort of Centurion ERVs and that sort of thing. But the Scammon was still a very, played a big role in heavy recovery. And with the light stuff, of course, it was too heavy for the soft skin vehicles. I remember that we had a 1500 weight Bedford. And it was just a GS truck carrying, I don't know, might have been ammo, although I don't think so. Because I remember pushing it, I got sick of pulling the thing out of the mud. when we're following the air vehicles on this occasion. We just rammed the big bracket at the front of the Scammel up against the gun plank across its tailboard and pushed it for miles and miles and miles across country just to keep the thing, you know, going and up with the rest of the regiment.
So that was basically what you were. Now, so why was there a crew of four? What were you all doing?
Well, it's the crew of four was on hand for if for instance you had a breakdown which demanded more than a couple of sets of hands, you had other vehicle mechanics with you as well as a recovery mechanic, and obviously on heavy vehicles most times it needs at least two men and sometimes more, so the recovery crew was also a breakdown and maintenance crew, as well as hauling them out of the mire. You know, you had to maybe fix them on the road. I mean, one of the simple little things was that all of the QL Bedfords, with the sort of running they did, and the wear that it was involved with them, they were pretty long in the tooth, most of them. They used to oil plugs up, and you found that you get one limping along, had only running on four cylinders, you know, and you do a plug change and get them back onto six and run on all six and get them away. Just simple things, really. It's something you could undertake some bigger jobs in the middle of the forest, you know, put a cylinder head gasket on a truck or something like that. Just simply to keep them going.
So it's the sextons and the supporting lorries were your job, basically.
Yeah, being a VMEFV, my main job was the hard skin vehicles rather than the soft skin.
But if you saw a lorry broken down, oh, you'd stop anyway.
Absolutely. In fact, we had an M20 BSA motorcycle on the hook at the back of the Scammel for most of the way around one of the big Northern Army Group schemes, this DR. It packed up on them, and
I'll come back to that, because that's moving into the actual work. So that's one. Now, what are the specialist vehicles? I know you weren't on them, did the LAD have them? You mentioned some of them. You started telling me them. What other specialist vehicles?
Well, the machinery truck.
The what's Austin, the machinery truck?
This was an Austin K5. Oh, just a minute. I think it was a K5. And it was the one with the bonnet with a snub nose, and it was one of the big Austin six cylinder vehicles, and it was a six wheeler. It was a 6x4. It had a gantry with a big long girder across the top with a pulley on it, which could also be used as a recovery vehicle for light skin stuff. But inside it had a lathe, a milling machine, a vertical borer, vertical drilling machine. All driven off the PTO from the main engine, and guys could turn up bushes and make nuts and bolts, and so you had a resident sort of fitter turner with the vehicle, and generally speaking he was the driver as well of that vehicle.
And what are the specialist vehicles?
Well, in Germany in the main, it was Land Rovers for the earlier day, and Jeeps.
Now, what were they for?
They were light service thing. Of course, the CEO ran a Jeep, we had a radio truck, of course, for our own.
Now, hang on, but these Land Rovers and Jeeps, I'm not quite sure what they're for. I mean,
well, the Ford Willys Jeep was.
They were actually part of the LAD, or were they what the LAD maintained?
The LAD had a couple. The regiment also had, well, they had obviously each the CO ran around in a one day.
So what were the LAD ones for?
The LAD ones was mainly for the CO, for the captain, the OC of the LAD, and fitters would use them as well, light work, travelling to a job if somebody came up on net on the radio. Asking for assistance, stick the toolbox in the back of the Jeep and away they went fix it and come back again, rather than take the scammel, you know, which was out of context.